Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Maxine Gowan from Bend, Oregon, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Well, thank you, Maxine, for introducing our Day One 2024 Australian Open Daily Podcast. It is 1:44 a.m. You find us, myself, Catherine Whittaker, David Law, Matt Roberts at Tennis Podcast Towers after our first Sunday start to an Australian Open. How are we and how did we find the Sunday start? David.
I do feel a little bit tired, I gotta be honest. But I enjoyed it. I actually enjoyed the Sunday start. I kind of canvassed a few opinions and they were split, I would say. I personally enjoyed the little bit of space that you had between, well, matches weren't every court in operation at the same time. And then I suppose it was so thrilling, the evening session, that first match, that's what I take away from it. But overall, I think I liked it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I mean, there is always a part of me, I think, that enjoys Grand Slams, where you get to 11 a.m. on the opening day and you get an avalanche of matches all starting at the same time and all, you know, populating your scores app, and you think, right, here we go. And we didn't quite get that moment. We not only was it a reduced schedule overall, it was a staggered start, wasn't it? But it did allow time to, you know, go into a bit more depth in some matches than I normally would probably on the opening day, and have some, just, I don't know, have some conversations with people. I feel like I wasn't just attached to my interactive screen the entire day, so that was quite nice. But thank goodness for the Sunday start and the early finishes that it's giving us. I mean, that has worked a treat, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, problem solved. Yeah, guys.
They nailed it.
We will come on to all of that, don't you worry. We're gonna work backwards here because we are going to start with the night session, and we are going to talk about Aryna Sabalenka's absolutely extraordinary start to the tournament. But I do think we should start with 10-time former champion Novak Djokovic and his 18-year-old opponent today, the Croatian Dino Prismic, who, I mean, to say that he's marked everyone's card as a star for the very, very near future, I think would be a tremendous understatement. Because look, this is a kid that we'd heard about before tonight's match, hadn't we? A lot of people had, you know, like David watching one of a showreel of one of West Brom's new signings. people had been watching YouTube material. The ATP did a very helpful little get to know Dino Prismic video, which we found cameraman Matthew editing earlier on in the day on my Instagram stream, a video of Dino Prismic on leg day in the gym, which I think every
day,
he
doesn't skip those.
Every day might be leg day for Dino Prismic in the gym. Those popped up. Like, people have known about his talent for a little while, but there's knowing about some talent and there's seeing a guy do what he did tonight with Novak Djokovic at the other end of the court, opening Rod Laver Arena, Australian Open, and it was startling, I thought, what that kid produced tonight, David.
Mm. And 4 hours worth of it. You do see sometimes somebody come out and be spectacular and hurt a big name for a little while and rock them. But it's rarely more than that, especially at that age. He did not play like an 18-year-old. He did not play like a novice. He did not play like somebody with that lowly ranking who's just new on the scene, who's never done it before. It was like he had been there before in another world. And there were so many things about the performance that just surprised me. I was waiting for the cramp to come, and I don't think it arrived until the final game of the match in the fourth, when it's ticking over to 4 hours. I waited for him to, on big break point moments, to go for broke, to keep, you know, I was thinking, when's he going to just pull the trigger and go for some outlandish shot to try and knock Novak Djokovic off the court? He doesn't play like that. I mean, he has firepower. He backed his own game to go toe-to-toe against Novak Djokovic as if he was Novak Djokovic. And the similarities were so stark to me, where we're sitting in the commentary box at the back of the court level. To watch him go backhand to backhand, they looked like identical backhands. I never thought he was going to miss. It looked so repeatable, reliable, and he just played with this composure and confidence that I can do this.
There were certainly points in the middle of that second set and the early stages of the third set where Novak Djokovic was wanting not to get involved in rallies with Dino Prismic. He was going big on his second serve midway through that third set. He really was like, I'm going to come out the wrong end of long rallies more often than not with this kid. And this was 2.5 hours into the match. I know you could look at the scoreline and go, okay, four sets, opening round, you know, somebody shows up, plays, redlines it and plays one flashy set against the 10-time champion and then is unable to sustain it. That looks like a pattern of match that we've seen before. It just wasn't like that, was it?
Absolutely not, yeah. I mean, this wasn't Enzo Cuoco, who did do that last year. You know, he did win that tiebreak against Novak Djokovic in the second set, in the second round, I think it was. But the rest of that match was not particularly close. But this was a total grind for Novak Djokovic. It was the first time since he's become Novak Djokovic, which we all put as that 2011 Australian Open. That was him developing into the greatest player of all time. It was the first time since then that he's played over 3 hours in the first round of a slam. And it was 4 hours. Like, it was totally different to anything he's ever experienced before. And I think it's interesting that the sort of highest praise of Dino Prismic came from Novak Djokovic himself. I thought it was extraordinary the way he, at the end of the match, recognized that it was a big moment for Prismic. He sort of made the whole crowd applaud Prismic rather than himself. And he was gushing in his on-court interview with Jim Courier. And he continued that in the press conference. And exactly as you're describing, David, he said it was like looking in a mirror out there. And it's the kind of praise that I've only really heard Djokovic heap on Carlos Alcaraz in the past, you know, where he's described Alcaraz as a sort of combination of the big three in terms of the weapons that he possesses. And he was talking in those sorts of terms about Prismic tonight, in terms of, I think what impressed him was the physicality, the fact that he was going toe-to-toe with him, winning those long rallies, defending so well, and also the mentality that he had. You know, Prismic, I think, genuinely felt like he could beat Novak Djokovic tonight. And I think Djokovic felt that. He knew that it wasn't just a set. He knew that it was a sustained threat for set after set, you know, hour after hour. And he's not used to facing that. And yeah, it was a really extraordinary performance from Prismic. And look, Djokovic was pretty poor at times, I felt, in that in that second set, and he's spoken about how the fact that, and you can tell in his voice, he's very nasal at the moment. He's not quite feeling 100%. So he wasn't at his absolute sharpest, but by the end he was playing some really good stuff because Prismic had brought it out of him. I don't think Djokovic was quite ready or prepared to have to dig that deep in round one. I don't think he quite had that in the tank, but he somehow found it. And all credit to Prismic for bringing that out of him. It was an amazing spectacle.
Yeah, I mean, Djokovic is the absolute master in riding out players having a hot streak, isn't he? He's just, his whole attitude is cool, that's awesome. You can't keep it up.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, when we so often talk about match management of Djokovic, I'm looking at this 18-year-old match managing against Djokovic and compartmentalizing the sets and going two love down in the third set after he's just won the epic second, but then getting it back to 2-2 and then taking a 3-2 with a break lead. And that moment, I really did think, blimey, if he can somehow sustain the belief, I was starting to think where it would rank among all-time great shocks. And I was thinking about the people I was going to doorstep and talk about it because John McEnroe was around and things like that. It genuinely was going through my head.
Who else was on the list? The loitering on the lawn with Law list.
I think if Djokovic had lost that match, all bets are off. I'm going for Agassi. I'm going for Courier. I'm going for everybody because it would have been as big an upset and shock as there would have ever been. And it's just, it just tells you everything about Djokovic, that he played that epic fifth game of the third set, lost it, gets 3-2 at a breakdown, and then wins the next seven. That is Novak Djokovic in a nutshell. And all power to him, because that takes him to it. And, yeah. And you know, he did, when I saw him practice yesterday, he had his pocket was stuffed full of tissues because he kept blowing his nose. I noticed the same thing.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't think saying that takes anything away from Dino Prismic, because Novak Djokovic will have been feeling equivalent. Look, whatever the level of slightly rough or, you know, not quite 100% healthy he was feeling tonight, he will have been feeling equivalent levels of that in countless early round Grand Slam matches over the last 15 years, and he will have won so comfortably in those matches. You know, Novak Djokovic minus a couple of percent is still pretty much the best player in the world, unless Carlos Alcaraz is absolutely on fire, certainly over five sets. So incredible from both of them. Are we concerned at all? I know he gets 2 days off now. He's the master of in-match management, of tournament management, all of it. But he is approaching 37 years old. And that was not only an extraordinarily long match, but a physical long match. He was suffering out there, Novak Djokovic. Is that the sort of suffering that he could feel in his legs later in the tournament?
In a word, no. I don't think I'm worried. I feel like he would have to have a similar test again.
That's what I think too.
Cumulative.
In isolation, yeah. I mean, he could. The likelihood is, who's he got next? It's at Popperin or Polmans, isn't it? I think Popperin's dangerous if he plays him. And so that's not ideal, personally, in my view. But generally, he's going to win most of his matches quite efficiently, I think, from here.
And it's a far less physical match against Popperin.
Yeah, true.
Isn't it?
Agassi could
be Mark Polmans.
Yeah. Agassi was... It is stating the obvious, but Father Time will get him eventually. And we're all just fascinated to know when that'll be, really. Mm. And I think, in a way, Djokovic is too. He's fascinated about how long he can keep this going for.
Mm. Okay, well, Popperin and Polmans play tomorrow. Novak Djokovic gets a couple of days off. Let's stay with the night session rather than sticking with the men's draw, and let's move on to talk about Aryna Sabalenka. Ella Seidel, the 18-year-old German qualifier for her. she steps out onto court, Aryna Sabalenka, the defending women's champion, at what time, Matt?
She came onto court at 11:33 p.m.
And what percentage full do you think the crowd was at that point, having just watched several hours of Djokovic and Prismic?
I would say 30-40%. And then first ball was at 11:41 p.m. And it was still 30-40%. And we posted a photo of that on Twitter. And, you know, someone said, well, that's not fair. You know, they've literally just seen a match. Of course, they're going to leave and go to the loo and go to the toilet. And I was like, okay, well, the whole point is that walking out moment onto court is the one chance you get as a defending champion to return to the court for the first time since you won it and receive the applause and the ovation that you deserve. And that was simply taken away from Aryna Sabalenka tonight. You know, she is never going to be a first-time defending Australian Open champion again. That was her moment. And it was barely a moment because there was barely anyone there to recognise it. And
it's absolutely not on the Rod Laver Arena crowd who needed a wee after...
Exactly. After no one's blaming any of them. No. It's the scheduling.
And the thing is, you could have switched those matches and, okay, maybe it might have ended up closer than it was. Let's say it's an hour and a half and Novak Djokovic goes onto the court at 9 o'clock instead of 7:30. He still walks out to a full house as the defending champion because it has only been an hour and a half, not 4 hours, because it's 3 against 5 sets. And I think they should have done it that way. And it's the same again tomorrow night, isn't it? And it's, I don't understand why they don't get that, really.
Yeah, I mean, I said this to you yesterday, David. Imagine a world in which, this is a stretch, obviously. Imagine a world in which women, for whatever reason, women play best of five and men play best of three. Women are never getting scheduled first, ever. Ever. Because it just wouldn't be seen as acceptable to put a men's best of three match on to start after a best of five set match. It's just a slanted playing field as far as I'm concerned. And I just think there should be a blanket policy of you can't schedule any match after a best of five set match. You can't have a second night session match after best of five.
I completely agree. I completely agree. And I also think, you know, they've essentially now got the same schedule as the Arthur Ashe Stadium, where they've got 2 day matches and 2 night session matches. But what they've not done at the Australian Open is bring the start time of the night session forward. So we're still starting at the same time we used to start. That's why we're still going to get the late finishes. That's why it's been a sort of total nonsense that the Sunday start would have any impact at all on the late finishes.
Ah, it's only 2:01 a.m. Calm down. We did one at 6:30 a.m. last year. That's the gold standard.
But
that's what they've eradicated. It's only two now. What are you complaining about?
David, Andy Murray has not yet played Thomas Martin Echeverry. Don't jinx it.
Isn't Hannad Meyer on after Andy Murray tomorrow? but basically what happened is...
I'd forgotten that.
What happened is there was this, you know, two quite quick matches on the Rod Laver Arena to start the day. And the day session was over at 4:20, I think it was, on the Rod Laver Arena. There's then a 3-hour gap until the night session. If they want to truly do something about late finishes, they now have an opportunity to bring the night session forward a bit. And I don't really understand why they haven't done that. I guess they're desperate for the night session to start on time. And they don't want a load of people coming in and not having seats to get to. I do understand that. But it feels like they could bring the night session forward an hour. They could start it at 6:00. And quite likely they would be starting on time. If a really long men's match during the day, then worst case scenario, they're starting at 7:00. But like, it just feels like they've got room to play with there, and they haven't taken advantage of it. And just so many misses along the way. And the big one, as you say, is they absolutely have to start with the women's matches at night, because it's simply unacceptable for matches to be starting at 11:41. That is 41 minutes after the tours have just decided that is too late for matches to be starting. That is 71 minutes after that match would have been moved if it was on the tour. You know, the new tour policy is 10:30. We're going to move the match to a new court. So just sort it out.
Yeah. Well, Sabalenka's way of sorting it out was just to condense her match into, I think, 51 minutes.
She's given us an early night. And I mean, she had match points at 43 minutes. And then she squandered several of them.
And it was really contrasting emotions for me watching this. I found it incredibly tough to watch Ella Seidel out there today. Clearly a talent, 18 years old, qualified. I mean, talk about being sent into the lion's den. She said qualifying for her first main draw at a slam two days ago, she said that was the best moment of her life two Aww. Days ago. And I know it's mixed feelings when you then get drawn in the main draw to face the defending champion. That's sort of a tremendous experience, but also kind of puts the kibosh of your journey on your journey going any further. But I imagine there would have been a mixture of nerves and excitement ahead of tonight. And I'm genuinely worried that that will be a scarring experience for her. I'm hopeful that it won't be, because she's clearly surrounded by great people. She had Andrea Petkovic there in a corner watching her tonight. Barbara Rittner is involved. She has got good people around her. She's young. She's a talent. Fingers crossed. But it was horrible. It was a horrible experience for her tonight. She was trying to keep it together, but at 6-love, 4-love, I think it was, she did struggle to keep the tears at bay on the court. It's, you know, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, and she's being embarrassed out there. It was horrible. But also, Aryna Sabalenka was absolutely stunning. This is just about, apart from the tiniest little wobble closing it out, just about as good as tennis gets. It's like she had the cheat codes on some sort of tennis version of FIFA.
Yeah, it was unplayable, really. And there's a few players who would have been able to do something about it. And Ella Seidel is not one of them. And it was interesting when we walk to our commentary box, we have to go through the players' warm-up area and where they stand looking at the TVs, and then they the practice schedules, and then they can walk out on down that Walk of Champions. And I walked past, on my way to the Djokovic match, I walked past this young woman with red hair with some people around her, and had a big smile on her face, and looked really wide-eyed. And I thought, I honestly thought, oh, I wonder if this is a sort of little thing that the tournament is doing to give somebody an experience to walk backstage. I did not know that was her. I had no clue. I'd never seen her before. And I just remembered clocking her as she walked past me and thinking, oh, she looks like she's, enjoying this.
She's having a nice school trip.
Yeah, basically that's what I thought it was. And then when I got down to the commentary box, she was practicing on the court. And then I started to, you know how you sometimes, well, I sometimes spot somebody, and I did the whole thing. I did the whole, she's hitting it well, you know, she's, you know, I genuinely thought, my word, she looks really good. She looks talented, and she's hitting well.
David promised Matter backhand. Mm.
I still stand by that. But the difference between hitting down the center of the court, or, you know, when somebody's not trying to make it horrible for you, which Sabalenka was, she was just smashing it to every corner. It was extraordinary to watch what Sabalenka did to that very compact, decent tennis player. And we were just sort of praying that it wasn't going to be a double bagel. And in the end, it was love and one. Yeah, I think she'll be all right.
Okay.
But I am hoping that for sure.
Yeah, some Love and One score lines are a lot less one-sided than they look, aren't they? This was somehow more one-sided.
It was, yeah.
She was absolutely awesome tonight, Aryna Sabalenka. She's probably tucked up in bed by now. She hasn't got a podcast to record. let's stay with the women's draw, seeing as that's where we are, before we get on to the other results from the women's draw today. I would like to tell you about On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider, who we are proud to be sponsored by throughout the Australian Open. For the first time ever, On Location will be the official hospitality provider of the Olympic and Paralympic Games Paris 2024. Didn't ask anybody about the Olympic Games in press conferences today. Very restrained of me, I think. That means that you can gain unparalleled access to the Olympic Games when they take place in Paris from Friday, the 26th of July, to Sunday, the 11th of August, 2024. Those dates are already in my diary, including being right there for the opening ceremony. Imagine that, being part of the celebration during the opening ceremony in prime locations at the heart of the action, all with exclusive hospitality. I do imagine it all the time. Whether from a grandstand seat on the Seine River or with incredible views from a bridge, each hospitality experience offers once-in-a-lifetime moments. The options On Location have for the opening ceremony are the Bridge 360 package, their most immersive hospitality experience, where you can enjoy stunning panoramic views of Paris, the athletes' parade, and the Olympic ceremony with hospitality in a Parisian-themed open-air brasserie on the famous Alma Bridge. Have they, like, reached into my dreams? they also offer the Riverside Gold package, which features breathtaking views with exclusive hospitality set against the backdrop of the Eiffel Tower. This is ridiculous.
It's good, isn't it?
You get VIP access to a premium Category A grandstand seat in an optimal location, plus exclusive gold hospitality at the Palais de Tokyo before, during, and after the opening ceremony, with world-class service, food, entertainment, and more. There's also the Riverside Silver Package, which gives amazing views of the athletes' parade with access to premium hospitality and exclusive grandstand Category B seat, plus access to hospitality in the elegant La Maison de l'Amérique Latine for first-class service, food, and entertainment within walking distance before the opening ceremony. London 2012 opening ceremony was one of the best days of my life, and I just was watching it in my living room, so I can only imagine. Just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast. I made sausage rolls with cocktail sticks, flags, British flags in them with athletes' faces on. Do you remember that?
You sent me photos.
Had a little Andy Murray face. There was a Tom Daley face. Lots of faces. Just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast. Tours, the number four, tennis.com/podcast, and select Olympic Games hospitality. Packages can be purchased there, or a dedicated On Location team member can contact you directly to create your perfect package. Now back to the Australian Open, where we're going to stick with women's results for the day. Caroline Wozniacki was a winner on her return to the scene of her one and only Grand Slam title. She beat an injured Magda Linette. It was quite a tough scene, actually, out there on the second court. She was clearly hampered by a hip or lower back injury, Linette. So Wozniacki progressing through to round number two, where she faces Maria Timofeva, who played in a match that I commentated on today. She beat Elise Cornet in what could very well be Elise Cornet's final Australian Open match. She's talented, Timofeva. I think that could be interesting against Wozniacki. She had a real Prismic-style sort of... This was her Grand Slam main draw debut, and she had a poise and a maturity and a just... sense of the moment that isn't teachable, I don't think. Very, very impressive. So I'm interested in that match in a few days' time. We had the return of the backhand, Matt. Amanda Anisimova is back, 6-3, 6-4 over Ludmila Samsonova, which is a pretty incredible result, actually. This is her first Grand Slam match since Wimbledon 2022. Matt and I went out to watch some, of course. Tennis Podcast fans were waiting there for Matt, knowing that's where he'd be. Midway through the second set, Matt started workshopping a press conference question that he wanted to put to Amanda Anisimova. And let's just say I'm really, really pleased he didn't go with version one, because it was weird. It would have been weird. I said, Matt, I see what you're getting at there, but you've got to make it less weird.
What was that?
I think I described her backhand as a sort of naturally occurring mineral. Something that just, you know, something that just exists in the world. You know, the idea being that in my mind, Amanda Anisimova, you know, who'd obviously put her rackets away for a few months last season, would just be able to hit her backhand like she always has been able to do when she picked those rackets back up again, because the shot is just always there. So I was trying to ask that question without using the words naturally occurring mineral.
Okay.
And I did manage to do that.
He did. You made it really not weird.
But clearly obvious well. What I was getting at, because after I asked the question, Matt Futterman came over and said, that was basically just asking her about her backhand, wasn't it? And I was like, oh, bastard. I've been rumbled.
What was the alternate wording?
I went with, you know, when you pick those rackets back up, were there any parts of your game that were just there versus stuff that you had to really, you know, work on and
fishing for a black
and his
backhand.
Face yeah, was, I was his fishing. Face was saying backhand.
I was blatantly fishing. Okay. And but she, I did actually, enjoy her answer, actually.
Yeah, she went, well, it's all there.
Yeah.
It's just where... She said the shots are always there.
Yeah. She said it's the fitness and yeah. It's the sort of stamina and everything. She said I'm human. Mm. And without doing it for 4 months, that's the thing that you lose.
Mm.
And look, she's just such a natural ball striker, isn't she? Truly one of the best that there is. And in that respect, I think it was quite a good matchup, really, against Samsonova. It wasn't a lot of moving side to side. It was a lot of hitting. And, you know, she looked like it was going to go three sets. She was 4-1 down in that second set, but reeled off five straight games. And, yeah, it was a really nice Grand Slam winning return for her.
She's definitely on the list of players that we just sort of want to see more of in 2024, as is Leila Fernandez, who was not quite the first winner of the day. I think that was Rakimova, but the second winner of the day on the John Cain Arena, 7-6, 6-2 over Czech qualifier Sara Bajalic. And it was just a good time, wasn't it? It was just a reminder of what an asset Leila Fernandez is to tennis. She's the best show in tennis when she's on. Pam absolutely nailed it, and we've got a lot of hopes, haven't we, riding on Fernandez getting to the third round and making the Fernandez Goff match that we're already dreaming of happen for yeah. us and for everyone.
Yeah, and today was a good opportunity to enjoy Fernandez, because she was up against a player who's clearly very good and promising, another Czech player. I mean, I think she was the Czech number 11.
Yeah, she was the Czech number 11. She was the fourth-ranked Czech teenager.
Bloody hell.
How would you describe a game, Matt? I mean, you watched the first set more closely than me. How would you...
I mean...
What was she?
I suppose not that dissimilar to Fernandez. I mean, that was one of the trademarks of this match. Both lefties, really likes hitting the ball down the line in the way that Leila Fernandez does, and Fernandez spoke about how she really had to adjust to that. Hits a flat backhand like Fernandez, but has a much more top spinny forehand than Fernandez does. Uses quite a lot of variation as well. And something that Fernandez picked up on was the fact that she had the hunger that Fernandez remembered that she had when she was 17. And she said, I knew that that hunger is a weapon. You know, you come out a little bit fearless. And Fernandez said that she had to sort of weather that. Looks wise, I can't explain it, but Bellec is a sort of combination of Cara Delevingne and Jennifer Brady. If you'll go with that. Yeah, very, very intrigued to keep watching her. Markéta Vondroušová was in her box, as was Yuri Lehechka. So all the
United Cup,
yeah,
all over again.
All the Czechs giving her a bit of support, which was
She was on the United Cup team, I think. Mm. So that is a bit of a reunion.
It's nice, and that. It's nice.
It is really nice, especially that. As the Czech Republic, I thought, was kind of the least vibesy team. In Perth, Vondroušová had a very weird United Cup. She didn't seem fired up at all. So, but there was always obviously something that resonated there in that environment.
I just think it's impossible to watch Leila Fernandez without having a good time. Mm. You know, she just makes you feel good about tennis because she so clearly loves it and wants it. And I don't know. I don't feel as though since she reached that final, we've quite had our money's worth of being able to watch her. And it's not, I don't blame her. She's had some injuries and all the rest of it. And I think in many ways that was an overperformance getting to that final at that time. And maybe the rest of it has been a bit more nearer the norm. But I just think what we saw at the Billie Jean King Cup is there's more there to come. Mm. And you're right. I mean, imagine Coco Gauff and her on Rod Laver Arena, given the proper prime time slot. That's what we need.
Yeah, David Law submitting an invoice for outstanding debts to Leila Fernandez for her lost 2.5 years of tennis there.
who's in the way?
Well, she's got Alicia Parks next.
Has
Leila Fernandez.
That's a good one.
I know that.
Mm. A couple of other women's results for you from today. Maria Sakkari, very convincing over Nao Hibino on the Rod Laver Arena, 6-4, 6-1 for her. We said in our preview show a couple of days ago that we had heard she was working as of recently with Ben Crowe, the sports psychologist who helped Ash Barty to win Grand Slam titles. Matt, that was something you wanted to ask her about in press, not something she wanted to talk about in press.
No.
Matt got Yulia Putintseva'd.
Did he use his mineral line in that one then?
Yeah, I got the look of, how do you know that? Do I admit that you're right? Yes, I will admit that you're right, but I'll also say I would prefer to keep that a secret and I don't want to talk about it, thank you. Which, you know, fair enough. So I didn't press on it. What she did talk about a lot was her new racket. She has a new racket for the first time in 10 years, which, you know, is a big change for a tennis player, you know, extension of the arm, all that to make a change. And what I thought was interesting was, to me, it sounded like she had really taken ownership of that decision. You know, she said that the rest of her team were a bit hesitant, but she felt like it was absolutely the right thing to do. She said she was playing with a racket that was very, very powerful because for, you know, 10 years ago, she needed that power. And she feels like she doesn't need that anymore. She needs a lot more control. So she's sort of switched in that sense. And she thinks it's really helping her. And she started this season very, very well. She got probably her only like really, really brilliant result was beating Leila Fernandez at the United Cup. Everyone else who she's played, she would have expected to beat. I know she beat Angelique Kerber pretty handily at the United Cup as well. But yeah, good signs so far for Sakkari, who, you know, was struggling to win matches at points last season and is stringing them together now. And yeah, she said it's the best preseason she's ever had. So that's good to hear.
I'm very pleased to hear that point about taking ownership for a big decision. It's one victory. We'll see, follow her progress, etc., etc. But that's what I want to be hearing from Maria Sakkari. I know I'm not privy to all the ins and outs of her relationship and vibes with her team, and I know there is a lot to be said for finding a comfort zone with your team, but from the insights I've had to her relationship with Tom Hill, her coach, I just elements of it just strike me as codependent, and it's always just made me yearn for her to just step up and lead, and sort of I want her to feel emboldened to of course lean on people when she needs to and find comfort zones and all of that, but also to find her power, I suppose. So that sounds like a really positive sign to me. We had Barbora Krejcikova surviving a real scare on the second court. She beat Mai Hontama, the Japanese wildcard, 6-3 in the third after being a set and a break down. So the big four still intact in the Australian Open. And last one I wanted to mention for the women's draw was last year's junior champion Elina Korneva. A winner today in three sets against Sara Cerebez-Tormo. I don't know what it means other than I hovered over picking Korneva in my predictions because she's a clear talent and is qualified here, which, you know, is always a bit of a feather in the cap in round one. But then I saw who she was playing and I thought, that's really tough for someone transitioning from juniors to seniors, because she'll just make you hit those extra balls that aren't required of you in juniors. But no, coming from a set down to beat Cerebez-Tormo, serious stuff. So one to watch out for, and we will.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Moving back to the men's draw now, and we had a couple of bigger seeds survive really massive scares. We had Andrei Rublev on the second court requiring a fifth set tiebreak to defeat Thiago Zybot Vulch. I didn't watch all of this match by any means. I rocked up on second court at the start of the fifth set, and it was pretty much exactly the match that I expected. He's a heck of a talent, Zajbocz Vuč. He's a real ball striker with a live arm. We saw what he could do against Daniil Medvedev at the French Open last year. But it always felt like Rublev would have enough in the end. There was just a moment where my faith in him wavered when he squandered match points on the Zajbocz Vuč serve at the end of the fifth set. But once we got into a tiebreak, I had faith in Rublev, perhaps more than he has in himself ever.
And the interesting thing is he went 5-2 down in that 10-point tiebreak, which in itself is just such a fascinating mental challenge, isn't it? The 10-point tiebreak, because you get that mini break and it still feels so far away to get to the finish line. And Rublev said, I thought that was it. I thought I was out. And as a result of that, I relaxed. And I played better. And it's really interesting watching him work his own mentality out post-match.
And then there was the moment in the post-match interview, which was utterly charming, by the way, from Andrei Rublev, where he's asked by the interviewer, you know, yes, this was a tough one, but is coming through a tough one like this set you up brilliantly for the rest of the tournament? And, well, there's just this incredibly long pause and then a deep, profound sigh from Andrei Rublev, which kind of tells you everything, doesn't it? Bless him. Over on the John Cain Arena, Taylor Fritz survived his own massive scare against Facundo Diaz Acosta, a lefty Argentine. 6-4 in the fifth for Fritz on the John Cain Arena, which, of course, is his trauma court from last year. That's where he lost to Alexei Popperin, something that we've learned from Breakpoint was kind of the hardest loss of his career up until that point, certainly in terms of how he felt afterwards. This was nip and tuck. Frankly, again, didn't watch every single point, had eyes on other things, but it came down to an awful game that Diaz Acosta played, serving to stay in it at 4-5. He has got incredible stamina, Taylor Fritz. He doesn't look like a physical colossus, but he never physically fades over these long matches. He's a great competitor, but there is something missing from his game that the very, very top players have, I think.
Yeah. I would say that's fair. I think he is a little bit one-dimensional. It's a very good dimension, you know. He's got a very good serve and rock-solid backhand, and his forehand. He goes after more and is more aggressive than he used to be with it, and more successful with it as well. But he does run into that ceiling when he takes on the very, very best players. But the sort of more interesting aspect, I think, of his career is these early stage matches at Grand Slams. You know, I think, you know, we can talk about the sort of ceiling of his game maybe having limitations, but he's also more vulnerable than he should be against players like Diaz Acosta. You know, I don't think Jannik Sinner is having those problems, and you know, Zverev probably isn't, and Alcaraz isn't, you know. And these are the players that Fritz wants to be competing with. But he's got a bit of a block in these early rounds in slams. He's frequently come unstuck. So any time he can get through one does feel like quite a big moment. But you sort of would like, for his sake, that he could do it a bit more convincingly. I mean, this one, he rolled his ankle when he was a set down, and really he had to get it taped up, and it really looked like he may well be going out of the tournament. So those great competitive instincts that you mentioned there have massively kicked in and helped him. But this was very close to a loss for Taylor Fritz, and that would have been really tough to take.
Yes, but he's got a great draw here. He does. Through to the quarters, where he would be scheduled to face Novak Djokovic, but he should be reaching that quarterfinal. Yeah. absolutely. Props to the trainers, the ATP and WTA physios today, because Taylor Fritz and Dino Prismic played their best tennis after seemingly suffering really bad injuries and having to get heavily strapped and taped up out on court. And they, I mean, they were good as new afterwards. I mean, pretty incredible.
Prismic had a trainer come on at 2-2 in the first set, and I thought, oh, I think the match is about to
early night for us.
Yeah.
Great.
They were right about these Sunday starts.
I am awarding sensation of the day to Chris O'Connell, unless anybody has any major objections.
I was very much enjoying Dane Sweeney for a while.
For a while. Winning for a bit, David.
Yeah, he was fun. And then we unearthed a little article from 2010 when the headline said he's like a little Nadal, and he was only 8 years old. And it was quite a story telling about how he'd done a GoFundMe page to try and fund his travel. And I think he's 22 now. And he played brilliantly against Francisco Cerúndolo and took it into a fifth set. And the crowd are loving it. And it is like the Brits at Wimbledon. You know, people play way above their level and their home crowd, and they get a lot of hype, and we're teasing, aren't we, with the sensation stuff. But it's fun. And then you've got O'Connell, who I sort of witnessed that without being able to watch the match. I was just out in Garden Square listening to it, listening to the Christian Garin Chilean army chanting against the Aussies. And it was just fabulous. And he had two goes, didn't he, to serve it out?
He did. Yeah, it was ropey stuff trying to close it out over the finish line. I did think we were going to end up in a tie break, but at the second time of asking, he managed to close it out. And Matt and I were watching this one at the desks in the media room, and I kept on surprising myself with my reactions. I was far more into Chris O'Connell than I realised.
What element of him were you into?
Well, I think he's a good watch. His game is very attractive. Remember, he had that incredible set against Daniil Medvedev at the US Open. We have, not consistently, but we have seen him be briefly sensational outside of Australia.
With his backhand, I seem to recall.
He's got a nice single-handed backhand. Yes. He can hit a hot streak and look really explosive. He's a good athlete. Look, to be clear, I don't think he's, you know, going all the way. But it was just right in the...
You'll be there, though, if he does.
Thanks for the clarification.
It was all just right in the sensation sweet spot. First day of a slam, you know, caught with free access for anyone, perfect size, perfect level of intimacy, perfect vibes. And, yeah, I was really into it.
Whereas Jason Kubler fell, didn't he, in a final set tiebreak to Daniel Galan. That would have been a big sensation moment as well. Or Kublev, as our driver home was calling him.
can I also just say, I mean, I didn't watch that match. I think that's impressive from Galan to withstand that,
yeah,
a final set tiebreak against an Aussie.
It was rowdy, yeah. Yeah, on the Kia Arena.
You could hear the roars on Rod Laver Arena. I was, you know, out there watching the end of the Djokovic match, and you could tell who was winning the points on Kia Arena based on, you know, when you get this huge roar. It was like, oh, that's a point for Kublev.
Oh, God.
Poor old Jason Kublev. He's defending his doubles title, isn't he, with Rinki Hijikata?
Kubler.
I do know that.
You're going to do
I'm
it.
I'm committing to the bit.
Oh, great.
It's going to become Blake.
I think that's it for notable results from today. Former finalist Marin Cilic is out. He lost to Fabian Marajan. Remember him?
Yeah, Alcaraz does.
Yeah.
There's no reason why Fabio Marijan shouldn't become a proper player.
No, well, let's see. Oh, Jannik Sinner. It was so long ago. I mean, literally yesterday. But yeah,
it's about 14 hours
and
ago.
And frankly, so comfortable and uneventful for Yannick Sinner against Botik van der Zandschulp. This was exactly as you said earlier, Matt. It's everything that Taylor Fritz isn't right now. It was just efficient and impressive. And I don't want to throw you under the bus, but you'd earmark this as a potential tricky spot for Yannick Sinner, given he was coming in cold competitively.
Yeah, and it was a doubly bad thing to think or predict, as it turned out, because actually I didn't think Yannick Sinner was very good. I really thought he was very rusty today. I was watching this match closely. He was not timing the ball. Like, it was just a little bit off centre all the time. You know, when Yannick Sinner hits the ball well, it's an incredible thing to watch. None of that whatsoever. There were moments, of course, but generally, I mean, his unforced error count was really high. Like, I do think he was a little bit there for the taking,
Matt,
today.
How bad was Botik van der Zandschulp?
Exactly. I thought Botik van der Zandschulp would be the kind of guy that might be able to take advantage of that, because, you know, he's a quality player when he's at his best, and he wasn't. I didn't think it was a particularly high quality match, but kind of impressive that he found his tennis kind of when he needed it. He never got worried. You know, it was impressive from that sense. But he was not striking the ball with anywhere near the authority that he was at the end of last season. And you know, he's got plenty of time to get that back, but he needs to get that back because it wasn't post puke Sinner today. It was
mid puke Sinner.
Yeah. You need to have a big puke in a bin, Yannick, and it'll all be fine after that. Okay, what about tomorrow's order of play? There are people listening that are like, what?
new listeners. Imagine if you don't know the reference point.
He put his head into a bin mid-match in Beijing, was it?
Mid-match against Grigor Dimitrov.
Mid-match against Grigor Dimitrov, and sort of barely lost a set for the remainder of the season after that.
It was unbelievable after that.
Jumping off point.
Yeah, it was like, do you remember during that Pegula, I can't remember who our opponent was, Pegula match last year where they got interrupted by Cotton Eye Joe and there was the
Świątek.
Yeah, points won since Cotton Eye Joe.
What a graphic.
Graphic. You could have a, you know, matches won since puke in a bin for Yannick Sinner. Tomorrow's order of play.
Matt is running the stat.
Tomorrow's order of play, Rod Laver Arena starts at midday with Anna Karolina Schmiedlova against fourth seed Coco Gauff. And then lucky loser Zizou Bergs, who is in for cursed Matteo Berrettini, who was a withdrawal today.
Oh. Zizou Bergs, who retired in qualifying.
High hopes for that match. Do tune in. Zizou Bergs against Stefanos Tsitsipas, second on Rod Laver Arena. He retired from qualifying and then nicked to sign up on the lucky loser list.
Is there another lucky loser just in case he can't make it?
Night session from 7 p.m. local. Alex de Minaur against Milos Raonic. And then Caroline Garcia against Naomi Osaka.
Yes, please.
Should be the first match.
Yeah.
The second court is Daniil Medvedev, the former finalist and third seed, against Terence Atmain. He's French, so I should have a feel for how to pronounce that surname, but I'm not at all confident I've done a good job there. But hopefully we'll have some confirmation by the end of tomorrow. 145 in the world is Atmain and a qualifier. Pavlyuchenkova is the opponent for Donna Vekic, last year's quarterfinalist. Go on, Pam. Although, Pam, you shouldn't be listening to this before the match. I hope you're not listening to this before the match. Too busy. Ons Jabeur takes on, oh, goodness me. Right, Yulia Starodubtseva, who is a Ukrainian qualifier who, if it's not clear already, I hadn't heard of before now. And last on the second court tomorrow, Felix Auger-Aliassime against Dominic Thiem. Rublev style. John Cain Arena tomorrow starts with Diana Jastremska, qualifier against Marketa Vondroušová. Then we have the sensation off, Mark Polmans against Alexei Popperin.
And stat about that in the newsletter.
Ooh.
A sensation off. That is the theme of the stat.
Oh, I love the thought of that. I'm looking forward to that. Sign up to the newsletter. I'm curious as well. There's no data involved here, but what are all Australian clashes like at the Australian Open? I can't think of too many of them.
That's the stat, David.
Yeah, but just
you can't think of too many of them because there aren't many of them.
Oh, I'm just thinking
recently,
vibe wise. You know, I'm really really intrigued. Like, who do you cheer for, Aussies?
Well, Make your choice and head to John Cain Arena around about 1 p.m. tomorrow and you can find out. That is followed by more sensation action, Daria Saville against Magdalena Frech. And then, in fact, it's sensation mania over there tomorrow. Omar Jasika qualifier against Hubert Hurkacz. Well, my goodness me, more sensations. Kia Arena, Storm Hunter against Sara Rani. We've got Stan Wawrinka against Adrian Mannarino over there. Buckle up, folks. Andy Murray against Thomas Martin Echeverri, followed by Linda Fravitova and Beatrice Adadjmaier.
Well, hold on a minute. What's that? Is Andy Murray following a men's match?
He's following a women's and a men's.
Okay, I mean, that really could be a long day on that court.
Yep.
Gee.
It sure could. Svitolina has a sensation. Taylor Preston. They really are everywhere tomorrow. Ben Shelton's in action on the 1573 arena. You got Rinki Hijikata against Jan-Lena Triff. You have another sensation off on court three. Vukic against Jordan Thompson. It's a far, far busier day tomorrow. I enjoyed today really, but it in terms of feel and mania, it didn't feel like day one of a slam, but I think tomorrow will.
And there was a sense today that they had perhaps sold more tickets than there were matches available on the schedule. And there were very long queues outside the courts. You know, there just weren't that many matches on today. So if you're in the grounds, you know, people were wanting to watch the same matches because there just weren't as many options.
We heard a word of absolutely raucous scenes trying to get into Tamara Kolpatch against Jodie Burridge.
Which, you know, is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's what you want. You want those outside courts to be full, but equally, you don't want them to be so full that there's loads of people queuing trying to get in. And it did feel a little bit overcrowded, I would say, today, just because there wasn't the courts to spread people out. And they were also trialling this new thing where fans could come in after every game rather than at the change of ends. And interestingly, Novak Djokovic said that he didn't know that was happening. So the players didn't even know about it. And
that's not great, is it?
And he was a little... Look, he totally understands the reason for trialing it. He says personally he doesn't like it, but he recognises that that's a personal thing. He's been used to having it a certain way for 20 years. You know, it distracts him when people are coming in after a game. And he did make the point that he felt like they were doing more waiting around for people because, you know, I don't think they've quite smoothed out the system yet, and maybe they were. But personally, I do like the idea, and it's one of those things that will probably just take some time to sort of feel natural, and umpires will get a sense of when they can restart play and that sort of thing. But yeah, that's an interesting thing that they're trialling at this year's Australian Open without making too much of it.
It's very much a soft launch, isn't it?
Very much so. Mm.
So that's your lot for day one, I think, as we approach the 3 a.m. mark. David, your mascot is Francis.
Right, Francis, I didn't do so well today. Tomorrow's my day.
Mine is Darwin, absolutely stitched up by Daria Sneger today. She was so close to beating Alicia Parks, but yet so far. Matt, Haider and Soma for you. How did you fare today?
We got some points thanks to best player in the world, Thomas Mahatch, who plays Francis Tiafoe next.
That's a good match.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, Tiafoe beating Chorich in the last match of the day on the second court today. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Greg, Chris, Jamie and Jeff. And we have shout-outs, Matt.
We have Pierre Cantin, or Quentin, maybe, in Montreal.
Hello, Pierre.
Hi, Pierre.
Peter.
He says, my sister and I met David at the 2022 US Open while waiting for coffee early in the morning. He was incredibly nice.
Oh, well, you must have caught me on a good day. Every day is a good day for me at the US Open. But anyway, very nice to have met you. And Pierre Damon is a player I remember with the name Pierre. And I think he was also part of the ATP sort of management at one stage. So there we are.
I was going Pierre-Hugues Hébert.
Oh, yours is
too. That's a diluted Pierre. It's a Pierre-Hugues.
Oh,
but
still good.
A Pierre nonetheless. Thank you, Pierre. I love Montreal. One of my favourite cities.
We have Paul Bullock, who is living in Malta, but originally from Kent.
Right, Paul.
Hello, Paul. Like Tommy Paul.
Yeah. Do we know any Paul's first name in the tennis world? I'm trying to think if I can think of any. I don't think I can. No.
It's quite late, David.
What a poser.
Paul McNamee.
Well done, Matt.
Former tournament director?
Former tournament director of the Australian Open. Paul was shouting at his podcast equipment there. It's like, me!
Well done, Matt. Paul McNamee and Tommy Paul and Paul from Malta / Kent. Thank you very much.
We have Barclay Hughes, who is from Missouri.
Like Barclays, the former sponsor of the ATP Finals.
Correct. And like Ian Barclay, the former coach of Pat Cash when he won Wimbledon.
Very good.
Right, Barclay.
Missouri, not a state that Matt and I have driven through.
No. And Barclay says, I love Mary Quillo and Pam Shriver chiming in on the podcast. Two of my favourite voices.
You and us both, Barclay.
We do too, Barclay. It's great. It's a very good name, that. Thank you, Barclay.
We have Jose Angelico, who is from a little city near Lisbon in Portugal.
Jose Angelico.
Yes. Great name.
Lisbon is another fantastic city.
Sure is. Oh.
Jose Angelico. Jose? Jose.
Acasuso.
Very, very good. Very good.
My work here is done.
Thank you, Jose.
And last but by no means least, we have Neil and Pat Roberts.
Hey!
Not Neil and Pat, Matt's parents.
We've got a lot to be thankful to Neil and Pat for, haven't we?
Everything.
Anything you'd like to say about your parents, Matt, to flesh out their
shout
out?
Oh, what a hospital pass. I reckon they're listening right now at lunch together, which is a nice thought.
Spanish omelette?
Quite possibly, yeah.
Neil, Pat, hope you're enjoying it. Thank you ever so much for your son and your support.
Co-sign.
Thank you all for listening. Make sure you subscribe to that newsletter. Check us out on Instagram, on Twitter. Hannah is doing incredible work there, as always. Check out Hannah's first column for us if you haven't already. We've been promoting that left, right and centre because it's so good. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.